This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
We'll talk about being broken mentally a little bit with my friend Chip Patterson. Incidentally, also with CBSSports.com. We should have a different title sponsor of this program. My man Chip Patterson. The college football season has begun, and I'm surprised we haven't had a firing already. We know Bournemouth already sacked Scott Parker after getting beat 9-0 by Liverpool last weekend. How is it that Scott Frost, another Scott, hasn't been severely damaged by that loss in Ireland? Our friend Mike Felder wrote a great piece on his, I guess it was his newsletter. It's like, they flew all the way to Ireland to do what they could have done in Lincoln, Nebraska. What do you make of that?
I mean, do you think Urban Meyer walks off of the big noon kickoff set and right to Lincoln, Nebraska to go take that job? I mean, you want to talk about just a little bit of like college football. I don't know. I'm just you can really, really bring in all the attention. We got a mailbag question about that. And I was like, oh, my goodness, you're already playing the hits right off the jump. Urban Meyer to Nebraska. Let's get it started. I'll tell you what. Here's my Scott Frost thought is that when you saw the post-game press conference, it viewed differently than it read, because when I was reading the quotes as they were happening in real time, it sounded like he was throwing his offensive coordinator, Mark Whipple, under the bus. You know, it sounded like he, felt very defeated, but, you know, was a little bit frustrated. Then it was the defeated part that really came through when I actually got to see the video of the post-game press conference, as if he knew that that result was so public, with 4.4 million viewers. I mean, it damages the psyche and embarrasses Nebraska fans to go in there as a double-digit favorite, to have a double-digit lead twice. Yeah. We make all the attention about an onside kick with 11 points, with an 11-point lead midway through the third quarter, and that is fair. But they also had an 11-point lead in the first half and blew that lead too. You blow two double-digit leads as a double-digit favorite. Your offense turtles up when it counts the most, and you get Pat Fitzgeralded. I mean, that game went exactly the script for the way that Northwestern wins games. Scott Frost, it was always going to be bowl game or bust, and unfortunately, that game might be the difference between whether or not the Cornhuskers are in a bowl game. And you go and you look at two things. Number one, the back half of the schedule is brutal. You know, the games that you would chalk up as losses, the Iowa, the Michigan, the Wisconsin, they're all at the end of the season. So number two, when Scott Frost's buyout drops from $15 million to $7.5 million on October 1st of 2022, does Nebraska's administration look at that back half of that schedule and think that Nebraska has a shot to make it to a bowl game? I think he finishes the year as the coach, but he's going to have to do some real circle the wagons, backs against the wall, pull a couple upsets off to be able to get to being the head coach in 2023.
I think Frank Solich is going to buy out that contract personally and do a hostile takeover and take his old job back. Chip Patterson is joining us. All right, did we learn anything? We'll start with the two ACC games, and we're really going to focus more on North Carolina. Do you take anything out of the game against Florida A&M as encouraging, or do we just dismiss it because somewhat of an undermanned Rattlers team with only, with 25 or 26 players who were declared ineligible? Obviously, most of those were not starters. So, but do you take anything out of that positively, negatively? What?
Two strong takeaways there. One very positive, which is Drake May.
Yeah.
I mean, just, are you kidding me? This was a phenomenal showing from somebody who looks every bit the part of his blue chip projection coming out of high school. He's filled out, seems to understand the offense well. He does all the things that you would hope you'd be able to accomplish. Like, our idea of the Phil Longo offense, for the most part, is based on the performance of Sam Howell. Sam Howell is a very good quarterback, but it also has shown that Drake May can step in and do the things with his arm and the things with his legs that Sam Howell did to make that offense so explosive. I would also point to the running back room, what Amarion Hampton did, what George Pettaway did. I mean, this is going to be an exciting offense that I think can score on almost everybody they play. They score a lot, if not on everybody they play.
Now it's going to look like Michigan with some creativity because they have a lot of good tight ends too.
I love what they've done with the inside receiver. That answers a major question, and I love that he took care of the ball in the red zone, right?
Yeah.
You took some chances. You found your big targets. You got the scores. I think North Carolina is going to need to score all the points that the offense can score because, I understand that Florida A&M, like Musa came from Vanderbilt. He's an experienced quarterback. He's a good playmaker.
He looked good.
Do you know who else is a good quarterback? The ACC's loaded with good quarterbacks. Yeah. You can't use that as the excuse. And by the way, if you're getting blown off the ball and if you're kind of, not being able to stand up against the run, if you're struggling in that area, what's going to happen when App State runs right at you?
Mm.
And when that is going to be a physical rushing attack. And this defense, man, it's everyone keeps coming back to Power Eccles, who did have a very, very good game. But I do think that the fact that it's going to be a bend but don't break defense is what it looks like is not overwhelmingly encouraging for me. So North Carolina looks like they can score 40 points a game. I think they're going to need to score 40 points a game because right now the defense does not look like it took a one-year leap as so many expected.
Chip Patterson, every Wednesday here on the Adam Gold Show. I'm making fun of this because it just struck me as funny. But in Mac Brown's Monday press conference, when he was talking about Drake May, it was either Monday or Sunday, talking about Drake May, he goes, man, he's a big kid. He's 6'5". He can see. Was he taking a shot at Sam Howell?
Maybe, for sure.
You can't take a shot at somebody's height. I mean, my son gives me a hard time. He's like, oh, Dad, you're short. I'm like, yeah, I am short. Deal with it.
How many inches does he have on Criswell? That was the other thing that I was looking at there.
Criswell barely played. I was a little disappointed at that.
Michael Felder pointed that out. He was like, Criswell's only 6'1". Like, was it a shot at Sam Howell or was it like one of the explanations
right.
for why we've gone all in on Drake May? That Criswell, though extremely athletic and very capable of being a playmaker, maybe doesn't have the same vision. And maybe some of that in Mac Brown and Phil Longo's eyes comes down simply to the 4 to 5 inches that separates those two quarterbacks. I don't know, but it's again, Felder pointed it out. It's like, of course, always got to give him credit, but
sure.
Two references here in the same segment.
That's why we love Mike Felder.
But he said, he was like, wow. It's like, if you wanted to think that this was still an ongoing competition, like they just shut the book on that because you played Florida A&M. And by the time Criswell checked in, the game had been put away.
Yeah.
You know, that was not what I expected. I expected that May would play, and then maybe Criswell comes in for the second half.
Yep.
And that wasn't what happened. This is Drake May's team. And the redshirt freshman with the famous lineage.
Yeah.
It's all on him. So we'll see how the rookie does at the Rock on Saturday.
Another just tons of good quarterbacks in this league, man. Just absolutely great to see. All right, let's talk real quick about the Carolina game at App and we'll probably hit NC State at ECU in the second segment. But because you alluded to it, when I look at this game and I was watching the Florida A&M game, all I could think of was, man, App is going to run like stretch runs all day long, soften up Carolina's middle of their defense, and then go over the top. App doesn't have the wide receiver crew that they had a year ago, but they're going to run the ball. They're going to be physical at the line of scrimmage, and they'll be able to take their shots. Look, I'm not a huge Chase Brice fan, but he's suited to do that.
Yeah, he's not going to tear you up with the dual threat. That is the one thing. North Carolina's safeties and linebackers and defensive linemen are not going to have the same kind of stresses when it comes to trying to bring down a mobile quarterback. But you are right that he proved me wrong last year a lot with his ability to sit back there and pick apart defenses through the air. I did not look at him in that light based on what I saw from Bryce at Clemson. So I think that he is 100% dangerous in the same scenario that you just laid out because that offensive line is so good, because the whole running back room is phenomenal.
Yeah.
They just keep fresh legs and they just run at you and they've got different running styles, whether it's Peoples, whether it's Marshall, I think that that is the biggest thing that is concerning, is that this the bend but don't break approach is going to put North Carolina in a situation where they are vulnerable to explosive plays, mm-hmm. where when you get into the red zone, if that app running game has a little bit of a rhythm to it, then they're going to be able to punch it in for touchdowns. But to flip it on the other side, I don't know if this App State defense is going to be able to get a ton of stops against an offense that I already believe is one of the better offensive units in the entire ACC. Like, I look at this game and I think it's going to play out a little bit on the scoreboard, not necessarily in style, to the way that we see these North Carolina Wake Forest games go. Not necessarily 62-59, but I don't know, 42-38.
Oh yeah.
38-35. I mean, this looks like no one is getting stopped, because App State's going to be able to pound the ball on the ground, hit explosive plays through the air. Drake May's going to be absolutely humming with this offense, especially with 1 week head start to sort of get everything going, which means it comes down to something dumb. It comes down to who makes a mistake, who steps up and makes a play. If you're North Carolina's defense, you hope that you get those fourth quarter turnovers the way that you did against Florida A&M. And if you're App State, you hope that the home environment, what should be an amazing atmosphere, is able to provide a little bit of boost for the Mountaineers and maybe rattle the redshirt freshman quarterback. I've got zero confidence on who actually wins the game. I lean North Carolina. Mm-hmm. But the one thing I feel the most confident in is that this is going to be a game with a whole lot of points.
I think the total is 55. Really?
Too low? Too low?
We might hit that at the half.
I'm with you on that.
I know what App's about. I know what North Carolina's about. I could be completely wrong, but I think this is going to go way over that. All right, before we're going to talk State ECU in the second segment. Florida State, glean anything from their blowout win over Duquesne?
No, because nothing that is going to help us understand how Florida State's going to look against LSU. Right. Nothing that's going to help us understand what Florida State is going to look like at NC State on October 8th. Nothing that's going to help us really get a feel for the Seminoles, just because we can say the wide receivers and the running backs looked good, but that's just such an athleticism advantage. And Duquesne doesn't have the defensive line to take advantage of the one place where the Seminoles are really, really questionable, and that's along the offensive line. I mean, they just mm-hmm. have this team that, if Jordan Travis can get some time, if they can open up some running lanes, then yeah, this Florida State offense could be really fun. And I think the defense is going to be pretty good too. I like him at linebacker, like him at edge rusher, like him a lot in the secondary. But, you know, like I look ahead at the LSU game. What can we learn from Duquesne and spin ahead to LSU? Nothing.
Right.
Because Florida State, it is possible that Jordan Travis is running for his life and the offense never gets any rhythm because LSU's in the backfield right after the snap on every single play. I think Florida State will look better later in the year when it doesn't have to play teams with a good defensive line like LSU has. But it's just one of those, you know, aspects of football where if your offensive line is getting beat right off the snap every single down, it's just going to be so hard to find success mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be the case for Florida State on Sunday night.
All right. Duke is a 7-point favorite over Temple on Friday night. Does that say everything about Temple, or am I looking at this the wrong way?
I had a fun conversation with somebody within the Duke program who said they were just really, really sad that a coaching change was made, because if they could have had that Temple game against the previous regime, it really would have been nice. But wow, the expectation is still that this Temple team is going to be a good opportunity for a win.
Steve Adazio, right?
Who was it?
Who's the coach now?
No, Stan Drayton. He's a former Texas assistant coach.
Okay.
I actually was wondering if he was the one who voted Texas number one. But as I told you from my sick brain, I believe it's either Nick Saban or Jeff Traylor from UTSA trying to gas up the Longhorns before their early season non-conference meeting. I think that Duke, on like an execution standpoint, will be more comfortable in its own skin later in the year.
Right.
But those opportunities to win won't be there. The best opportunity to win is going to be here against Temple in week one.
All right. Chip Patterson is with us, as he is every Wednesday. When we come back, State's trip to East Carolina. We'll see if it's a little bit of an ambush situation. And big picture for the ACC, three or maybe four really important games with Chip next.
Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuiter with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We're talking retirement and coach. I'm a simple guy, but I like colors. Tell me how I can color code money and get ready for retirement.
I like colors too. I like pictures. Colors. I like graphs. I don't like just a bunch of words. And so what we try to do is we try to break down all those words on your statement, all those numbers into three colors, red, green, yellow. People are amazed when they come in, and most of their money is in the red category.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Now, red means high horsepower potential. It also means high loss potential. So you have to, it's a give and take. You can be willing to do that or that. Yellow means liquid money. You can get it any time. It's not going to earn anything. Green gives you safe growth, but also gives you lifetime income. As we get closer to retirement, we need some green accounts. We need the green zone, we call it. In Baghdad, green zone was important. Green zone's important for you, too. The next 10 people, Adam, it's a $1,000 value. Golden ticket we're going to put together for you, your very own total plan that has a green zone.
It's a traffic light. I hope it's green for you. 800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuiter.
There's always room for Tribe on this program. 100% always room for Tribe. Would you not agree, Chip Patterson? Always,
without a doubt. Always room for A Tribe Called Quest. This is like very good bump music across the board.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, a credit to Q-Tip, Alicia Hee Muhammad, Jarobi, you know, the whole production crew behind it. But yeah, for sure.
And Dennis Cox. Let's talk about the Wolfpack and their trip to East Carolina. From an East Carolina perspective, it's a program that is and will continue to get better under Mike Houston. They've got a lot of familiar names and faces that are still there. But with all respect, isn't this entirely about NC State, this trip?
Narrative-wise, yes. Narrative-wise.
I think the game, too.
Ah, so I think it's at the hands of the ECU defense because so much is made of Holton Ahlers and, you know, ECU has some good wide receivers, two good running backs.
Yeah.
Like the belief is sort of you put in this, you know, fun offense. It kind of fits with what your brain always expects from ECU. I think that the ECU defense with, you know, a decent amount of experience might be a little bit overlooked and underrated in terms of how important they are to the Pirates' success, not just in this game, but over the course of the season. And I think it brings it back to, it brings it back to a conversation that we've had, frankly, for like 2 months now, where I look at NC State and I look at the ceiling of the quarterback who throws an amazing ball and takes care of it. Great on third down, great in the red zone, 35 touchdowns, 5 interceptions, almost 3,500 yards. Like all that stuff is all very true. But as a unit, do you think that NC State overwhelms the opponent? Like, is it a really dominant offense?
No, they haven't been.
Yeah, I just, if ECU's defense can cause some trouble, keep this game a little close, get into a good rhythm, prevent NC State from being able to get a leg up and then ride the defense on their way to a 2-touchdown win, for example, then you start to bring into factor the intangibles,
right.
ECU playing loose, Dowdy Ficklin absolutely rocking like those.
Yeah.
That is why I say that the game itself is kind of, I think matchup wise is on whether ECU's defense can cause some problems for Devin Leary and NC State's offense, because that like, I think that ECU's offense, for everything that I said about, you know, it being, you know, good skill players, experienced quarterback, and an offense that can be really fun, I don't think they got anything for this NC State defense.
No, that's right. I think NC State's defense is in shutdown mode this week, and I do believe that East Carolina is a much, much better team as they continue to grow, and I love what Mike Houston has done and will continue to do there. My question about State is that in a year like this, being conservative, you know, not taking too many risks, I think's the wrong way to do it. You've got a quarterback as good as Devin Leary. I think they've got tons of wide receiver options, even though they did lose Emeka Emezi and a couple of other guys. But just Devin Carter's got to be a guy to take a big step. You got Thayer Thomas. There's other players. You got, what was it, Porter Rooks. You've got guys who can catch the ball and be dynamic. Jordan Houston's a good running back. Tight end position looks like it might be in pretty good hands. Trent Penix came on at the end of the season and looked like a really good option. I think their offense can be much better if they just let it rip. Trust your defense to keep to erase whatever mistakes might happen. So if Devin Leary throws 8 interceptions this year, I'll be okay with it if they are taking a few more chances and trying to be more explosive rather than try to wear teams down. I don't think you're going to beat East Carolina by doing that, but you're probably not going to beat Clemson by doing that. I think you got to be dynamic.
Yeah, you are thinking let the defense clean up any mistakes that the offense makes. And my read on the way that that team handles its business is ride the defense and let Devin Leary get us to where we need to go in those crucial situations.
So am I wrong in saying that that is not the formula to get to have a career season?
That is not there is a great comment that has been said by many of my friends who are NC State fans, which is, I wish we started every game with a touchdown deficit. I wish that they had to come into every single game with the kind of urgency that they had when North Carolina jumped out to an early lead in that game at the end of last season. If the kind of urgency that you see when the offense picks up the tempo, starts to move a little bit, when Devin Leary starts to sling it around the yard, starts to trust his instincts and pick apart a defense and utilize, like you mentioned, I don't know if I'm – wide receiver depth isn't awesome in a lot of ACC schools.
Right.
But you are right that especially with Devin Carter as your X, Thayer Thomas as an inside receiver, mm-hmm. Penix as an inside receiver, you've got enough 1-2-3 that you can really cause some problems for opposing secondaries. Yep. But sometimes, just running the ball on first down for 3 yards every time.
Self-check.
Does seem to make some people happy. It is a way of going about your business. It is a way of going about your business. And look, it has led to a strong 2020 when no one expected it.
Right.
The chance of knocking on the door of 10 wins last season and a victory over Clemson. I mean, what was it? The NC State continued to just find ways to almost lose that game. As they were just holding on so tight all the way to the finish line. I think that this NC State team is very much poised for 9 wins, just going about their business because they're so good defensively. And Devin Leary is such a dude. But if you want to talk about winning an ACC championship or a top 10 finish in the AP poll, playing in a New Year's Six bowl game, then I do think that there's some steps forward. Look, and this is not an NC State only thing. I have the same criticism for Jimbo Fisher at Texas A&M. Texas A&M will forever be held back by the fact that Jimbo Fisher has no real plans to innovate and sling it around the yard, mm-hmm. that he's just going to ride a really good defense and a future pro or a, pro style game control. Here's the playbook. Here's all of your reads. Don't make any stupid mistakes. Jimbo Fisher is limiting what Texas A&M can do, even though it has elite talent in the SEC. So I'm very curious to see. I don't think that we see the evolution this week. I think NC State wins this game by 2 touchdowns, going about its business. October 1st, that's
not the way to win at Clemson. I'm going to use a golf analogy. What we're looking for, what I'm looking for, is I know it's 240 over water, but I'm going for the par 5 and 2, and I'm not going to lay up to a safe distance and to a comfortable distance and play the wedge game from 100 yards. I'm going to go for the green. And I think what you're saying about State fans is that they'd be okay with a triple bogey start to the Tour Championship if you know that you can come from all the way back, as Rory McIlroy did.
How happy was Adam Gold as Rory McIlroy took that thing down?
I smiled. I did smile. 1,000 smiles. All right. One more thing about the Wolfpack, because this is the way I look at it. The way they have done business before, in terms of not doing too much, will wear them down, as you described. To me, that's a really good way to win 9 or 10 games this year. Mm-hmm. But I think the way that I'd like to see them go about it, be a little bit more willing to take chances, be risky, is the way to maybe win 11 or 12. Is that fair or no?
Absolutely fair. And let me throw one more note on this. I said that I think NC State will win this game. I do not think it will be easy. I think it will be difficult, and I think it is important to embrace how difficult it is, because I think this is the toughest game NC State plays when you consider location and opponent until that Clemson game.
Until that Clemson game, right.
And so it's like they need to bleed a little. You know, they need to – like you want to see them all of a sudden get put in a tough spot and wiggle their way out, because this is going to be the hostile environment. This is going to be an opponent that has raised its level of play. ECU will not play many games better than it's going to play with NC State in town, with all the intangible motivations factored in. And so embrace how difficult it is, because you need that experience before you go to Death Valley.
Final thing for Chip Patterson, CBSSports.com Cover 3 podcast, my friend. There are 4 non-conference games that are really worth looking at this weekend for the ACC. And I'm curious what your thoughts are on the level of importance, and what do you think the ACC will do in these games? West Virginia's at Pitt tomorrow night. Backyard brawl to open up the non-conference season for the ACC. The state trip to East Carolina, the Carolina trip up the mountain to App, and Florida State LSU. How important is it for the ACC to have a good showing? What do you think the ACC's record will be in those 4 games?
3-1.
Mm.
I think Florida State takes the L. I think that Pitt, NC State, and UNC all win. I don't think that North Carolina or NC State wins, as I'm predicting, will do anything, even though they will mean a lot.
Those are good wins
for each of those programs. But if you're talking about national perception, I think that Pitt losing would be a lot of egg on their face, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. So it almost feels like Pitt winning doesn't do anything for you. I'm going to add something to your card here.
Okay.
Because what's even more important to me is that Virginia Tech beat Old Dominion.
Okay.
That Boston College does not lose to Rutgers. Like it's all losable. Like it's all losing situations. Like across the board, it's like, well, if you win, everyone says, oh, okay, whatever. But if you lose, then the pile on the ACC starts. So it's not, let's go prove how good we are. It's don't screw it up. Welcome to Don't Screw It Up Week in the Atlantic Coast Conference.
Week 1 is Don't Screw It Up Week. All right, Chip, I thank you very much. You're right. I was very, very happy Sunday afternoon when Rory completed the comeback. It was awesome. I thank you very much. I'll talk to you next week. Football season's here. Cover 3 podcast. If you're not listening on Sunday, then you're doing Sundays wrong. Is that
Sounds
right?
Sounds good.
Is that fair?
That's right.
Talk to you later.
Y'all be well.
You got it. Chip Patterson here on the Adam Gold Show. All right. We're into stoppage time, but that's okay.
And now your halftime entertainment.
That's fine. Out of time. It's all good.
Yep.
You ever a Winnie the Pooh fan?
Am I a Winnie the Pooh fan?
Yeah. Were you ever?
Who? Yeah. What do you mean, what was I
am.
I
don't know. Some people.
I am currently a Winnie the Pooh fan. I'm a fan of the 100 Acre Wood. Come on, man. I could sing. I am up, down, touch the ground, puts me in the mood. I can sing. I am a little black rain cloud hovering over the honey tree.
Go on.
I mean, I'll do
this
it
This is halftime entertainment. No, go on. You say you can do it. Prove it. Prove it.
I'm just a little black rain cloud hovering over the honey tree. Yeah, go ahead. Tell me what you got about Winnie the Pooh.
That's wonderful. Oh, well, this is not gonna this is not gonna top that. Well, I'm guessing you're looking forward to Winnie the Pooh cloud. Blood and Honey.
What?
Yeah. Winnie the Pooh Blood and Honey. Oh, you haven't heard about this?
No, I haven't heard about this. This doesn't sound Winnie the Pooh-ish to me.
Oh, no, it's very much Winnie the Pooh. So, because of years of copyright, or because it's been around for so long, there's different copyrights that just expire. Now, the image of Winnie the Pooh, that you cannot use, but you can use the characters and their names for different properties.
Piglet?
Exactly. Piglet, Tigger.
Eeyore.
Uh-huh. All available to use. Now, there's actually a horror movie called Winnie the Pooh, Blood and Honey.
Gosh, don't do that to
me. First trailer just released.
Don't do that to me.
Yep, lapsed copyright, you know what? On the original book.
I'll bet you Rabbit is the axe murderer.
No, I think Pooh is.
No way.
Yeah.
Nah, Pooh's too passive.
Yeah. So, yeah, the trailer shows, spoilers here for people who don't want to hear about the trailer, but the trailer shows a grown-up Christopher Robin returning to the 100-acre wood he abandoned and meeting the bloodthirsty Pooh and Piglet he created by leaving them behind.
See? Oh, man, they're too passive. Rabbit. Robin. No, Rabbit would definitely be the axe murderer.
He might be. Might be.
I would keep my eye. Or maybe Owl.
Yes.
Owl.
Owl's sneaky, that one.
Yeah, Owl was a faux intellectual, though.
Okay.
Owl wasn't nearly as smart as he pretended.
Yeah, you never know. But I just find it very interesting. I might watch it.
Pooh was actually the smartest.
Yeah.
Pooh was the smartest.
Think. Yeah,
exactly.
Speaking also of movies, Fast and Furious 10, because we need a 10th one of these. Set photos have been revealed.
Wait, another one?
Yeah, there's another one. I haven't seen the most recent one, number 9. I didn't watch it. You know who's going to be there first in line?
Right.
Brendan Whitted.
Is he?
He loves the Fast and Furious
movies. I've seen one of them. I saw the one. I don't know if there might have been more than one with Rock. With the Rock,
I think
was
there were two with him.
I think 8.
5 and 6, maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know if he was in 7 or not. I can't remember.
I don't remember which one
but
I saw.
I think the first one he was in was number 5. That one was actually pretty good because it was a heist movie.
I don't remember. It was just exactly what you think it is. It was that movie. Those movies do nothing for me, but it was a hot Wednesday afternoon in the summer, and we went to a movie to get out of the heat.
Yeah.
So, okay.
There you go. Also, in the movie world, you know they're doing a Beverly Hills Cop 4?
Really?
Yeah, Eddie Murphy's in it.
Is Paul Reiser in it?
I don't know if Paul Reiser is in it. I do not know that, but some set photos leaked out. Eddie Murphy's still wearing that iconic Lions jacket.
Is he?
Yeah.
Is Judge Reinhold in it?
Oh, I don't know much about the movie. There's no trailer or anything yet, but it's being filmed right now.
Have you seen Beverly Hills? You've seen the original Beverly
Hills
Cop.
Yes.
What a great movie. Chris Rock was in that movie.
Yeah. We're going to get one of those.
See, a movie I've seen.
We're going to get. Yeah. Well, how long ago was that?
A movie I've seen.
Yes. You can quote Winnie the Pooh.
I've seen.
You can talk Beverly Hills
Cop. Oh, man.
Congratulations, Adam Gold. Up with the things.
Thank you very much. By the way, I recommend, especially for parents of, like, you know, 2-3-year-olds. Get the entire Winnie the Pooh series, but also the Tigger movie.
Oh, yeah.
The Tigger movie was very good.
He was my favorite.
Yeah, I mean, Tigger's just fun.
Exactly.
Just fun all the time.
Bouncing all over the place.
Bouncy, flouncy, bouncy.
I'm all in on that. So I know you pointed this out to me earlier. Fox and ESPN are currently in some really early negotiations with the Big 12. About a new media rights package, even though it's still a couple of years away.
The exclusive window has not expired. Mm-hmm. So essentially, ESPN and Fox are both right now negotiating to extend their deals.
Yeah.
And I have an interesting note about the ACC, rather the ESPN and the Big Ten in a second when you're done with this.
Okay, well, but go into that because I'm actually going to get something more into what impacts us locally here in terms of Sinclair Broadcasting. So go and get into what you're going to say there about the Big Ten.
Right. Well, what I didn't realize that in the initial, in the old contract, which is kind of still in play this year, it's a draft. So Fox gets the first choice.
Okay.
Of every Big Ten game.
Nice.
They always choose Ohio State, Michigan.
Of course.
ESPN in the current deal gets the second choice.
Mm-hmm.
The game this week, they took Ohio State, Notre Dame.
Yeah.
That's why this game is on ABC at 7:30 tonight. Otherwise, Fox might have taken this game too and maybe put it on a Saturday night. But, yeah, the ESPN got the second pick. It was a draft. And the reason why the ESPN didn't pay for this deal to stick with the Big Ten was because they no longer were getting the array. It wasn't so much the money as it was what types of games they would have access to if they decided to get on board. Because they weren't getting first choice, second choice, or I believe third choice. There you go.
There it is.
All right, get back to your thing. I'm sorry.
All right, so Sinclair Broadcasting, which owns Bally Sports. Okay, well, actually, there's a subsidiary to Sinclair called Diamond Sports Group, which, again, a subsidiary of that. So Sinclair has hired a bank company, or actually two of them, investment banks called Liontree and Moelis. Hopefully I pronounced that correctly.
Okay.
Now, Liontree was the bank that was hired by The Athletic last year when they were looking for a buyer, which eventually went to the New York Times. So Liontree also was the bank involved in Ted Leonsis's purchase with Monumental Sports Network buying NBC Sports Washington last week. So this bank is involved with generating capital and helping people either get sold or helping with purchases in that regard. So that's where this bank comes in. Well, Sinclair has hired them. They did hire them last year as a way to help raise some money for that direct-to-consumer product that we see now with Bally Sports Plus.
Mm-hmm.
But there's potential talk of Sinclair might already be looking to sell their RSNs, that Bally Sports might already be looking to sell. Now, these RSNs were bought in 2019 for nearly $10 billion. All right, now, since then, the RSNs really, they've struggled in a sense because carriage disputes, the pandemic, you know, they're not on YouTube TV, they're not on Hulu TV, so it's hard for people to watch these RSNs. And there's a potential that Diamond Sports Group, again, that subsidiary of Sinclair that operates all these RSNs, might potentially be filing for bankruptcy. Now, that does not help for teams that have deals with Bally Sports, like the Carolina Hurricanes, like the Charlotte Hornets.
Like the Atlanta Braves.
Like the Atlanta Braves. Yep. This is not a good sign if that is the case. Now, again, if Sinclair is able to sell, now there are potential options out there. Okay, what if, for example, what if Amazon comes in? What if Apple TV comes in to buy these regional sports networks to put them on their over-the-top platform?
We were talking about it last week. This is why it's actually good for teams to own their own.
Yeah.
Right? Which maybe we're going to go at some point direct to consumer. If you don't own a network, we were talking about Fenway Sports Group before.
Yeah.
Fenway Sports Group owns NESN, New England Sports Network. So they own the Red Sox network. I think Boston Bruins games locally are on NESN.
Mm-hmm.
They own that. Maybe the Celtics, too. They own that. The Celtics might be on NBC Sports Boston or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, like, the Mets own SNY.
Yeah.
Yankees, mostly, and there are other owners, but the Yankees own the YES Network. So, can you see Tom Dundon owning the Carolina Hurricanes TV Network, whatever it would be called? Canes TV.
Yeah.
Dundon TV.
There it is.
Top Golf TV. Pickleball TV.
Mm-hmm.
The, what is it? The Alliance of American TV. Just kidding. Just kidding.
So if you want more information on that, again, how this could be, all this works out, if you like to really get deep into the weeds on this thing, our good friend John Oran, Sports Business Journal, has information and a story up on this.
Seems like we should break off a call to John Oran.
I'm 100% in on this. A lot of people out there probably aren't truly interested in it. They just want to know, where can I watch the game and how can I access
it? But
again, this impacts your ability to watch these things.
It always helps to be a little bit better informed with these things, and everybody watches TV. It's not just about sports. There's a lot of other things really at play here. All right, do we have anything else?
That's it.
We are out. When we come back, was it a sweep? Was it a sweep yesterday? We're going to place bets, and somebody's got a really, really big ego after yesterday. Next.
Over the crossbar! The Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast. Gosh, there's no way. I'm surprised I fit into the studio today. I'm surprised my head got through the door.
I know.
A clean sweep of all three EPL bets.
Yeah.
A clean sweep. Shouts to Southampton for beating Chelsea.
Yeah.
Shouts to Fulham for pulling through with a win over Brighton.
Yeah, I know.
And Leeds with a second half equalizer with a 1-1 draw with, heck, who did Leeds play again yesterday? I'm forgetting now who Leeds played yesterday, but it didn't matter because I had them all. Plus 900 yesterday, Dennis.
Yep.
Plus 900 yesterday. All right. Should we do this?
Yeah, I guess.
Place your bets. Place your bets. Here we are.
I bet you slice into the woods $100.
Gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slide.
Yeah. Okay, you can owe me. I owe you this.
Oh, that's right. It was Leeds-Everton. I said I was a little worried about Everton. Everton had a 1-0 lead. I dug their pink shirts yesterday. Everton broke out pink playing at Ellen Road. That's pretty good. All right, sir. You go first.
I'd just like to point out that I was 0 for 4 yesterday. So I went from being in the positive back into the red.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's all right. You'll get it back today.
It was fun while it lasted.
Just why
having
you just,
tens of dollars.
Why don't you just bet every day Aaron Judge is going to hit a home run?
I should have yesterday. He hit another.
Hey, he's got 51. He's amazing. All right, sir. Where are we going?
Okay. I'm actually going to go to the EPL.
Okay.
We have actually a few more matches again today.
We have five today.
Give me Tottenham over West Ham at plus 110.
Oh, Tottenham plus 110 over West Ham?
Yeah.
I'm going to stay away from that.
Okay. That's fine. That's up to you.
I think West Ham won last week. Not only scored their first goal, but got a win for the first time. I think that's trouble. I think that's a trouble spot for Tottenham.
Really?
I think West Ham, I'm not going to do it, but I think West Ham at least extracts a point at home at the West London Stadium out of that one. But I'm rooting for you.
I'm sure you are.
Good friend of mine is a big Tottenham fan. Tottenham supporter. And I need Son to do something who has done nothing for my fantasy team. He got me an assist in their first win. They beat Southampton 4-1. He got an assist and that he has done nothing since. So match week 5, anytime you want to start scoring goals. I'm going to go with my side today. I'm going to go with Liverpool to win by 2 over a little bit of a banged up Newcastle squad. No, Saint-Maximin. He's got a hamstring injury. Plus 290, Liverpool to win by 2. Doesn't make a difference what the score is. By at least 2. Liverpool by 2.
Okay. Now, Bournemouth, they just got shellacked the other day, right?
9-0. Scott Parker got sacked.
Yes.
I call him J. Crew Scott Parker. Did you see what he wears the same thing on the side? A tight little gray cardigan.
Oh.
He's got a white shirt with a tie. I'm like,
Adorable.
No, don't do that.
Adorable.
Don't do that.
Well, they're playing Wolves today.
Yep.
They're at home versus Wolves.
They are.
I'm going to take Wolves in this one.
Yeah.
Plus 125.
Yeah. I have it at plus 135.
I'll take it at 135.
First of all, Wolves has to win. They've got to start winning matches. So I like that. I like that as well. Look, I got two quick takes on EPL without doing a game.
Imagine
without
that.
Doing that game. All right. My second one, I got a baseball game. A baseball game today. Mets Dodgers tonight. It is a Jacob DeGrom Wednesday. Mets need a win. DeGrom, I believe, pitches a little deeper into this game than he normally does. Give me Jacob DeGrom, 10 strikeouts or more, and a Mets win plus 225.
Okay. Yankees, Angels, Mike Trout hits a homer plus 280.
All right.
Garrett Cole's pitching.
Ooh. Gerrit Cole's got to get right at some point.
Well, not tonight. At least not when Mike Trout hits.
All right. I don't know the number. She's definitely plus money.
Okay.
Serena Williams tonight at the National Tennis Center.
Oh, okay.
Against the second seed in the women's draw. I think Serena extends.
Plus 215.
Give me Serena plus 215 today. I don't care. Yesterday, plus 900. House money, man. House money. I am willing to risk the 100 with Serena because I am here for the Serena train rolling on beyond tonight.
Who does the video for her?
We
talked about yesterday. Oprah did the video for her yesterday.
It was a little much for like a Monday night at the first Monday night at the National Tennis Center.
Like, she won, folks. She'll be back.
Right. I am excited to watch her tonight. It is going to be 100% star-studded again because every time she plays now, it is like Venus played yesterday. It might be her last match. She lost in the afternoon. Like, why isn't Venus getting the same treatment?
Yeah.
They are going to play doubles together, and I think their time in the draw starts tomorrow in women's doubles.
Okay.
But I was a little disappointed that Venus isn't getting the same treatment. Anyway.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.